Garden Talk time.
Good morning,
Joni. Good morning, Mardell and Jerry.
Good morning.
Here it's time to talk gardens again.
Talk gardens. I love it.
It's better to talk about it today than to be out in it,
That's for sure.
So to start, I just want to say a couple things today to remind people that the Mosquito Lake Market is happening again this Sunday, and it's going to be between 1 and 4. And that's a market that they're trying to get going only once a month out the road. And, of course, everybody knows about the farmer's market that happens here every week. But I just wanted to put a plug in for Mosquito Lake Market that's happening this Sunday. So I also, before we get started on our new questions, I want to briefly revisit the question that we had about root maggots quite a while ago. And we got another reply in through the email that said that one of the methods that they used was they tilled their soil in the fall so that the root maggot eggs would get turned up and would be exposed to freezing. While, yeah, I think that may kill a few, but I think that what's more likely to happen with that is that it's going to spread those eggs throughout that whole bed or that area. But what this brought up for those of us who review these questions and answer it is this whole question of till or no-till. Mm-hmm. And Jerry has one opinion. I have one opinion. And it's not really opinions. I would say we have different experiences. And so I've learned that it's kind of a hot topic here in Alaska, that growers and gardeners all throughout Fairbanks and up in Delta, everybody is kind of weighing in on what's working in Alaska. So I am inviting people here, if you have an experience and opinions based on experience on no-till versus till, please send them in to garden at KHNS, and we will kind of do our own little database for Haynes.
Yeah, a good way to kill the earthworms in your soil is to take a rototiller
right.
And put it in there. It'll people have done even scientific research on it, and it'll kill more than 60% of the earthworm population.
Yeah.
They breed back up again, but it's it'll take care of them.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of evidence that aspects. But I personally feel like there's some that we have to figure out some way halfway between till versus no till. But that's my opinion, and we'll talk about that another show because I think there's enough information out there for maybe a couple shows to talk about that. But so I just wanted to go back to that. So on to this week's questions. So this is a twofer question. Can I let my kale plants overwinter in Haynes, and should I?
Yes and yes, especially if there's snow cover. The kale will emerge in the spring. Actually, it won't emerge. It'll just stay in the spring and set out new leaves that are quite tender and delicious. But after about one harvest, they'll go to seed, and you'll have to replant. So, yes, you can, but and you'll get a harvest in the early spring, but then you're still going to have to replant because that population is going to go to seed when it first gets a chance.
And it seems like it's around June that it goes to seed. So the valuable part of that is that, you know, who else has kale greens in May? And so that is one of the value. One year what I did was I took my kale plants and dug them out of the ground in September, October, put them in buckets, brought them into my greenhouse. And I did. I had kale. But the truth of the matter is that we have about 2 or 3 months where we just don't have enough light for anything to grow with much vigor. And so I got a little bit, but did I think it was worth it? No, I didn't. And so it's much easier for me to go to the freezer and pull my kale out there. And so I'm going to just take a little side trip here a little bit because I get a lot of questions about this. Do I have to blanch kale? And I don't know, well, I do know the answer that no, you don't have to blanch kale. And it comes out of the freezer quite nicely. And what I am doing this year, actually my method for some of my kale is I'm actually taking it off the stem. So I take the hard stem out, put it in a big Ziploc bag and just freeze it in the freezer. Let that be frozen, and then take it out and just crush it up. And so you end up with a whole bunch of little pieces of kale, frozen pieces of kale. And then I take that and put that in a smaller bag, and that's how I store it. And then in the winter, I go and I use a handful of that or six handfuls or whatever mm-hmm. I'm going to use. Now, the question that I have had with this is, do you lose nutrients because you are not blanching it? And I haven't really been able to find an adequate answer. I've asked some people that I think are reliable sources, and nobody seems to really know too much.
My suspicion is that you also lose nutrients when you blanch.
When you do blanch.
And, and we do blanch. Obviously a different opinion. We blanch for about a minute in boiling water and then freeze the kale in some liquid. So it's basically being frozen in water. It's water that it's been blanched in. And often we'll take different kinds of greens and put them together, kale and collards and mustard, Swiss chard, and even turnip greens, and put those in there and freeze it like that.
And freeze it all together so you have multiple greens. Okay. And what I have done for years is doing exactly that. I've blanched my kale always and just put it in freezer bags. But it's one less step. If I can make this work, I like this because it's one less step that I don't have to blanch my kale. I do blanch all my other greens.
So when it comes out of the freezer, is it unblanched? Is it salad? Can you use it in salad, or is it more for cooking?
I would use it for cooking, but it's limp. You know,
it's
limp. It's kind of, I don't know if you've ever massaged a kale salad. You don't even really have to cook kale. You can just take your hands and mush it up with an acid of some sort, a lemon juice or vinegar or something, and it becomes really kind of wilted and soft, and that's kind of what it's like.
Okay.
So I imagine you have to be pretty conscientious about getting all the air out of it, so that you don't get a lot of freeze-burned greens when you set it up without any water in it.
I have a trick that I use for that. I put a straw, I zip the Ziploc bag, I put a straw in it, and then as I'm zipping it shut, I'm sucking on the straw to suck all the air out, and I continue sucking and pulling the straw at the same time and zip it.
Yeah, and it works pretty nifty.
It works.
Unless you reuse your bags, and they always have a little hole in them.
Oh, they always have a hole, but I reuse them anyway because I just can't throw them away.
I am the same way. Okay, so I think that's probably enough information about kale.
We had a question about dill.
Okay.
I love and grow dill in a planter on my south-facing deck. This year, all the lower fronds are turning a rust color and dying. Any suggestions? The upper fronds seem okay. There are no apparent bugs or pests.
So I think, and those of us who looked at this, it sounds like this plant is stressed, probably due to the dry weather is what we talked about. Do you agree with that, Jerry?
Yes.
So the fact that you have grown it here before, obviously you have years of experience to show that how it can work. One thing I'll throw out there is if you happen to have carrots planted next to this or in the vicinity, look up carrot motley dwarf disease. There's a slight possibility it could be that, but the circumstances would have to be right and it would have to be near carrots because this is a virus that is in carrots and gets transmitted by aphids over to dill. So just look that up. We won't go into any more detail in that because it's kind of a rare, unlikely thing, but possible.
And what's less rare is when you have a plant that's growing in a container and it gets dry, it's very hard to rehydrate that soil, especially
yes,
if there's a lot of peat in it. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to be conscientious and water it from the bottom rather than from the top, and when you feel it's getting moist, then remove it from the water source, and that way you're getting even watering, this really does sound like environmental stress.
Yeah, and that's true, and I had experience of that this summer. Things dried out more than I have seen them dry out in a long time, so could be that. So, okay, next question. My strawberries are inundated with clover weeds, but they're still producing well. The weeds are so rooted in. Any advice on how to reduce that clover infestation? Suzanne writes that question.
It's a done deal. the clover's there. It's going to stay. You're going to have to move the strawberries. And the clover's not all bad because it's a nitrogen fixer. And it's actually when you turn it under the soil, and we have to go back to till again, you are putting nitrogen in the soil that came from atmospheric nitrogen. But the strawberry plants are going to have to be removed and put into a separate prepared bed in order to be able to eliminate the clover from the strawberries.
Yeah, and it definitely is a huge problem. I actually am in the process of changing my strawberry system because strawberries were my most labor-intensive crop, and because keeping them weeded was just a nightmare. So my method that I am going to, and I have started, it's working. I've started my first beds a couple years ago. I'm putting them in a raised bed, and I'm covering them with a black plastic, a black tarp plastic, impervious to water. So you have to be willing to have a drip irrigation system to really make this work, because you have to be able to get moisture underneath this black plastic type material. And I put holes and I plant my berry plants through there. Now, the thing you got to remember about strawberries is that most varieties of strawberries thrive in year 2 to 5, depending upon the variety. So it really, it's a good idea to change your strawberries out anyway. And so this is one theory. Jerry's going to talk about another theory about strawberries. And so take those strawberry plants out and either use the runner or use a young plant and replant them in a bed that doesn't have clover. With maybe a little compost and steer manure. I'll put that in. Yeah. Go ahead.
Two cautions. One is if you use that the impervious weed barrier, you do have to have drip irrigation under it. If you use a barrier, a weed barrier that allows water to get through the soil, it'll dampen the weed enthusiasm to come up. But you also have to worry about it because it holds a lot of moisture. And if you have a very wet time, you'll probably get rot in there. So you have to be cautious about that. The other thing is, and we're still investigating this, but hybrid strawberries are different than wild strawberries. At least they behave differently. And in Louisiana, every year, new plants are purchased and put in the ground. And I think that those are one-year-old plants. And they are, they produce very well the first year. If you allow them to make clone, to make runners and plant runners from that year, the next year you'll get half the crop and half the size berries, and the third year you'll get nothing. So hybrids lose their vigor very quickly. I think that the wild ones are more tolerant of being of staying in the same area over and over again and being cloned. I think Melissa takes one pup, the closest growing pup to her to the parent plant, and we'll take that and replant it in the spring. And in the fall, because that's when the pups are produced. When the pups are produced, she gets a healthy pup and then transplants that into a separate area.
She actually plants in the spring, and that's another difference. Spring. She plants in the spring, and I plant right at this time in August because I feel like that gives enough time for them to get their roots established. And I have had the experience, I've got a bed right now that the first year I planted it did nothing, the second year it was kind of okay, and now the third year it's going bonkers. And it's a hybrid. But if you look online, you will find that strawberry plants are defined, different hybrids, different plants, have different peak times, have different different patterns with this. So
so have a friend who grows the strawberries and go over there and pick.
It's true. That's what I did. I have Joni strawberries. They're my favorite strawberries. So do we have time for one last question?
Yep, minute and a half.
Okay, here we go. My white dahlias are infested with thrips. Any ideas on how to deal with this?
You could kill them with neem oil if you have to. You may not have to kill them. If they're just there but they're not harming the plant, there may be a mixture of beneficials and non-beneficials in there. But if they're starting to stipple the flowers or stipple the leaves, then neem oil is a way, environmentally friendly way, to kill the soft-bodied insects. And it also remains on the leaf so that others are less attracted to it.
Can you spell that, neem oil?
N-E-E-M. And the second word is oil.
Okay. All right.
So I talked to our resident flower expert about this, and indeed, dahlias, light-colored flowers, but particularly dahlias, are a big attractant to thrips. And so one answer is don't grow light-colored dahlias. Grow dark-colored dahlias. That's one answer. But also, she uses sticky traps. And so what I found out, I didn't know this, that For thrips, you want blue sticky traps. For fungus gnats, which we talked about on a show a few weeks ago, those you want yellow traps. For thrips, you want to put the trap fairly near the flowers up on the top of the plant. For fungus gnats, put it down close to the soil. But remember that when you are using sticky traps, you are not only getting the little insect that you want to kill, you're also getting all the beneficials.
Right.
So, well, maybe not all the beneficials, but you're getting a lot of those.
Anyone that's curious enough to go there.
That's right. Yeah. So you're maybe taking out some things that would be helpful to you, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jerry and Mardell. And what is the website that they can ask questions?
Garden@KHNS.
Garden at KHNS.
Well, KHNS.org, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we invite questions, comments, and remember, no-till, give us some feedback on that.
Right, and if you catch either of them on or Melissa on the road, out and about in town, just ask them a question.
You can, but it's better if you send them in because I don't have a very good memory. But so use the KHNS.org if you can.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Joni.